This episode of the Real Talks podcast is brought to you thanks to the MGF Group, a premier building material supplier in New York City. Whether you're a seasoned contractor or a DIY enthusiast, the MGF Group offers a wide range of premium building materials to suit your every need. From cement to lumber, protection materials and safety nets, the MGF Group has got it all under one roof and pride themselves in timely and reliable delivery. Check out the mgfgroup.com for more information.
This episode of the Real Talks podcast is brought to you thanks to the Taylor Public House. Right on the doorstep of Madison Square Garden, the Taylor Public House is the perfect place to connect with family or friends before taking in a concert or sports event. The Taylor is known for its warm welcome, classy ambiance, and comfort food. It has two floors, three bars, and two private event spaces for parties and gatherings. Be sure to stop by and experience the Taylor Public House for yourself, located in the heart of Midtown Manhattan on the corner of 35th Street and 8th Avenue. Check out thetaylornyc.com for more information.
Hello there. Welcome to the Real Talks podcast. I'm Alan O'Mara, an author, speaker, and mental performance coach with sports teams in the US and Ireland. We originated this podcast in Ireland, where I'm from, and are coming to you this season from New York City, where I live now. In this new season of the Real Talks podcast, we're diving into meaningful conversations with authentic people from art, music, sport, and life. As always, we're recording at Stella and Fly, a coffee shop and wine bar on New York City's Upper East Side, so you might hear the espresso machine kicking in from time to time. Last week, we spoke with Irish boxer and Olympian Emmett Brennan. So this week, I'm looking forward to reflecting on that conversation and much more. To do that, I'm joined by the fabulous Real Talks producer and my fiancée, Mary-Kate Boylan. Hi, Mary-Kate.
Fabulous. What a fun start.
Yeah. I added that word in that wasn't in the script.
I was going to say, I definitely didn't write that into the script. What'd you think of the script otherwise?
Thought the script was very good. It just lacked a good strong adjective around your name. So happy to fill that in.
That's a good point. It's Monday.
Mm-hmm. How are we feeling about that?
I think that it's bringing a different energy to the podcast. When people are listening to the podcast, they'll be lucky enough to be in a Wednesday. But we're coming on a Monday, so it has that energy. Might be a little more scattered. Mm-hmm. Might be better. TBD.
I'm feeling good about it.
I've had so much coffee, and I feel like I could have endless amounts of coffee. I could drink coffee till the end of time, and I don't know if it would be enough.
Really looking forward to this crash later. We better get this podcast done and recorded.
Yeah.
So Emma Brennan, what have you been thinking about, feeling about since we recorded and released that conversation?
I don't think I had ever really had to think about boxing before.
Like just as a overarching concept?
And I just keep thinking like that is so wild. Like that's just another level of like commitment to something when your thing, like you're going to get hit. Mm. You're going to be in pain. Like when he came here, he had a black eye. Just, that was appalling to me. The amount of pain I'm willing to be in is none. but it is cool thinking about that, thinking about like, I think that he's had really heightened experiences because of the Olympics is kind of like the most high performing thing that we like kind of have as a society, mm-hmm. but so much of it, it's things that we can kind of distill down and we all experience on like different levels. He also said casually my new favorite phrase that I keep trying to use in day-to-day life, even though it's like less applicable for me, which was, he was talking about getting a black eye in his fight, even though he had won. And he was like, you know, you go swimming, you're going to get wet. And I was like, that is amazing. I love it so much. I don't think I've used it correctly yet, but I'm using it.
Yeah, it was a very good way of describing it. And I think like you bringing those two things together, like just going back to like boxing at a top level, like, you know, over the years, I've been around a few different boxers and like I've got to chat to a few different ones. But I think it was my first time really like interviewing a boxer and really getting, I suppose, to that like second, honestly, with Emma, even third level of like his mindset and his thinking and like like as a sport, like it's honestly just a, it's a crazy sport. Like I think, like obviously growing up, like we both played different sports, like different people in our families played different sports, and like I would, you know, get like football for me, I was like, this is a tough game, like, you know.
And we did play sports to the same level, so thank you for looping me into this. Because I, a Northeast Peanut League basketball all-star, you, something very similar, I think.
Okay, that hurt. No. But no, I think like for me, like, like, yes, I've like played sport to a very high level and been around lots of other sports, but there's just something different about boxing. Like it just hits different. Yeah. Like, sorry, no pun intended, but like, as you said, like Emmett's here with a black eye, or you talk to a guy, you know, like after being in a fight, like they're just, I suppose when we talk about like preparing to perform and then like just post an event, like just the repercussions of it are just so significant and different. And like even over the years, I remember like growing up when we would be like in preseason or winter training, sometimes we would do like boxing training mm-hmm. as like kind of the start to get us back in. So like, yeah, you'd be like on bags or whatever and like doing like speed work. And it was like, it's a really good workout. If anyone's ever doing like those kind of fitness classes and stuff, mm-hmm. like it's a very, very good workout. Like it's like a full on sweat. But then sometimes they'd be like, yeah, now we're going to do like a little bit, like, you know, like do his body punching. And I just be like, excuse me, like, no, like, absolutely not. And then you get some lads like, ah, don't be so soft. I'm like, I'm a football player. I don't want people punching me. Yeah. But then, like, even at times they do, like, oh, it's like, oh, we're doing these fundraisers. So, like, we're going to do, like, these boxing competitions where, like, people who, like, you know, we do, like, 6 weeks of training. I never did it. It was, like two or three teams that was around would, like, actually get in a ring and, like, punch each other in the face. And I'm like, no, sorry.
I don't know. I don't think I can get behind that fundraiser idea.
But I think, no, I, like, not, wouldn't be for me. But, like, I think, honestly, like, I just came away from the conversation with Emmett. It's, like, so... I genuinely blown away by his like commitment, mm-hmm. his focus, yes. His resilience, his toughness. And I think it was like, I think it was really also really cool that we got to talk to him very, it was like just a couple of days after he had fought. So I think he fought on a Thursday and we spoke to him like early the following week. So like, yeah, it was like the Black and Brew Bruisers were still there. And also he was still in, and I thought it was nice, was he was still in the process himself mm-hmm. of putting the pieces of the puzzle together, reflecting on what had happened. And even though he'd won, he was really kind of looking at himself in the mirror and searching for answers. And go back, like you said, like, you know, you go swimming, you're going to get wet, which, and it is kind of part of, you know, like the roll of the dice. But I think for days afterwards, every time he looks in the mirror, he sees the repercussion of maybe some of his preparation wasn't up to standards. And he was definitely feeling swirls of that, which I respected, because I think as an athlete, or, you know, with people in high performance in different walks of life, it'd be very easy to come in here and say, well, I won my fight, all's good, move on to the next one. Because we wouldn't have questioned that really, because, you know, we just checked online or, you know, seen different reports. Like, he won. It's like, great. Mm-hmm. And like, I had texted him, like, congratulations on the win. And he was like, nah, like, I'll talk to him more like later.
It's a double-edged sword, though, because I think when you're doing something that intense, and yeah, maybe like a mistake is literally like visible on your face. He touched on it too. Like he's his own toughest critic, which is probably a blessing and a curse, right? Because like you talk about self-compassion all the time. We love self-compassion. And kind of that's a balance that striking might be like a little hard.
Yeah, that's something that, I mean, I think as people in general, so like away from sport, we all struggle with, you know, self-compassion, or we're going through adversity or struggle or, you know, self-doubt. Mm-hmm. It's very easy in society, tells us like to be more resilient, like basically just like keep going, persevere and kind of get on with it, carry it, like just keep showing up. But like, yeah, the self-compassion part of it is something that's often lacking. And then like that's even magnified more or multiplied more in like an elite sport perspective of actually giving yourself some space. Like, okay, well, I messed that up, but what was the reason for that? Okay, actually, like, you know, say for Emma, for example, like, so you'd moved to New York, didn't necessarily have the right structure around in terms of coaches, in terms of preparation, facilities, but they're all like huge learnings, because like for him, like the courage was getting here and trying to make it work, and now when he comes back, he'll know all these lessons for like the next time. So I think, yeah, like definitely he'll be beating himself up a little bit and like try, like almost like annoyed at himself, but also like from the self-compassion side, like just huge learnings there for him that I think he's going to take out of it. And I think like with that point of like the accountability is a word that really coming away from that conversation, like all over the years I've met many different people, like he was very like accountable to himself. Like it was very impressive in terms of that, like the self-awareness piece, like, okay, actually, like, genuinely look in the mirror and be like, no, I got, like, I barely scraped through because A, B, C, D, E. And again, he won. So it just was so easy to, like, let the victory cover the cracks. So, like, that self-awareness of that to, I think, the accountability of actually acknowledging and sharing it with us, then it's, like, just tied in with the honesty of his reflection and just really sharing. I thought it was very inspiring, honestly.
I think, too, the accountability piece was something that I took away from the conversation so much. But it goes so much beyond the sport. Like, the thing that it stood out to me was how he talked about accountability in his personal life. And I'm sure that informs his performance as an athlete as well. Accountability is so huge. It's something I feel like I think about a lot as I get older, because it does take a lot of self-awareness and self-compassion to be accountable. We can all, as people, truly justify anything to ourselves. Like, I think about, like, say, in the past, when I just think that you can, yeah, you can think of the reason why you were right, why your actions were justified, why someone else was wrong, why you're the good person, why you were the best, and why everyone else was wrong about you. It's just such an important learning. And I loved hearing him talk about it, especially in terms of his journey and how much he's kind of made a real choice every day to, like, turn his life in a different direction. How much his life has changed in 2 years. So much can change in 2 years. I walked away from that, like, thinking that that part was inspiring to me, because I think we forget. We get so lost in, like, this season we're in. But everything is so cyclical. Things can really change if we choose to. And I think that that's the whole reason he's been able to make those changes, as he talked about, with his drinking, with his lifestyle, with his mindset. And he's had to make those choices multiple times in his life. And that's another thing we all do. Like, our paths are not linear, you know. Like, if you're on a healing journey, you're gonna keep keep working at it and go. Yeah, exactly. But I really, really, really loved the accountability piece. I think that accountability is so important as we get older. And it's probably, like, one of my pet peeves. But, like, when I hear someone not being accountable, it's kind of like, okay, well, then I can't even have a conversation with you, because you're not in a space to take in any of this. You're choosing not to have the self-awareness to get anywhere in a conversation. Mm-hmm. And so what he said about that, what he said about changing your life, you know, he was like, if my story says anything, it's that, like, you can always change. You can always have a second chance. And I loved that, because it really does. Like, yeah, there are circumstances that really can lead us down a bad path. But then it is also possible to switch it.
Yeah, that quote, I think the one you mentioned there, and I remember as I listened back to it myself, like, that, I'm pretty sure, like, the direct quote was, like, there's always time to change. Like, I thought it was really, really powerful. And, like, I think looping that back to, like, touching upon, like, the accountability, because it's easy to, like, for me, like, say, and over the years, like, we've talked to, certainly on the podcast, it's the majority has been sports people, but, like, I think bridging that, and I think it's so important to make this point of, like, and I'd always believe, like, you know, if you're a better person, you'll be a better athlete. Or if you're a better person, like, you'll be a better performer, like, if that's in work or, like, a musician or whatever. Because it's, like, the skills that, like, help you, like, be better at one thing, like, are transferable across, like, that sense of, like, in terms of your mindset, in terms of the self-awareness, in terms of the self-compassion, in terms of the resilience, in terms of the courage, like, practicing them in one part of your life, it makes it easier to bring them across. And I think Emmett was someone who, through his own personal circumstances, like, kind of had got lost. And obviously, I think we'll come to the drink in a little bit, but, like, those lessons of that, I think, it's like the rising tide lifts all boats, you know, like, the accountability he had to get for himself as a person has probably helped make him a better athlete. But then using that to be a better athlete then also helps you be a better person, if you know what I mean. It's not like, sometimes we like to, like, label things in boxes and push them all around us. But, like, it's someone like Emma, yes, we know him as a boxer, but, like, he's a person and a, you know, a son or a brother or a partner, and, like, all those, like, whatever those different parts of a person's life is, like, the skills are transferable and can be used across the board.
And I think it's because when you're making that choice to live your life a certain way or to be accountable, it affects, and to shift your mindset, it affects every single day. It affects every part of your journey. It affects, you know, my relationship with you, my relationship with my family, my relationship with my friends. And you're able to enjoy not just the highs, not just the wins, not just the big things, the big moments, but just a random Monday.
Like we're doing right now. Yeah, just as I said, like just over like the whole conversation, I listened back to like just, I know I said accountability earlier, but also like the honesty was like, that's someone I felt like was very comfortable in terms of taking off the mask and just really sharing what they're thinking, what they're feeling, both in terms of what had just happened, but also where he wants to go. Like I just, there was a real sense of life lessons and the learnings he's used have really kind of, I think really kind of embedded down or reinforces like confidence and perspective. And he's definitely someone, you know, I'd be excited to keep tabs on and keep eyes on over the next couple of years. So I think when you get to that, and sometimes it happens where like you, if you get a, like, I mean, he would have called it like a rock bottom in terms of your life, whether that, you know, ever has caused it, there's multiple different reasons. Like sometimes like when you rebound from that, like you can go back after things with kind of a renewed sense of purpose and energy. And that, I don't know if you, I definitely got that off and was like, no, okay, like this is like, this is what I'm going to do now. And I think that, that in terms of that's, there's time to change. Like, yeah, like he said, a lot can change in 2 years. And it's like, I think we ended up actually talking about it after we'd stopped recording the last day before I left. And just in terms of like time's going to tick by anyway. Yeah. So like you can either adapt or change or go after something that you think you want, or you can't. And like, but time's going to go either way.
Yeah, it's never going to be the perfect time. It's never going to be the perfect time for him to, you know, leave kind of the solid job that he had, that he was not enjoying, that wasn't fulfilling him, but was a good job for good money at the time to go be a boxer. Like there's never going to be that perfect time. It's more so just having wanted it for so long that it happens, and really making a choice. It's all choices. Like I think that a lot of times people think that if someone makes a big shift like that, it's because of maybe like one big moment or one big thing.
Like an intervention almost.
It, no, it's like a choice that you make informed by knowing how much you've wanted it and just choosing to go get it. Because you can want it that much and not get it, like not go for it. And he did. And I think that that's a really cool learning, again, for not just someone on that level, for someone at any level. If it's like just something you want in your life, it's never going to be the perfect time. You just kind of have to do it.
No, and it comes all the way, like it, in terms of day-to-day life, like it comes all the way down to, you know, and I think we both would have experienced this. Of say, for example, thinking you want to change jobs, or for me, Joe, could like, both of us as well, like moving to a different place.
Yeah.
And I think one of the interesting things, and you talked about this too, like is that normally, even when you think you have like that eureka moment of I'm going to make the commitment, I'm going to make the choice, like usually it's been bubbling away under the surface for certainly weeks, probably years. Months. And years. I was going to say, like, for some of the stuff, just years. Like
I think every time it's been like, even if you don't realize it, you know, like I had been in the same job, same career for 10 years, and it was a great job, a great career. And I just knew it was not the match for me. And I, when I like was really starting to come up on like making this decision of like, I'm actually going to leave. Like I was in TV news. I was like, I want to write. I want to write my own things. I want to produce my own things. I want to work on kind of more creative things that fulfill me. I felt like if I had to write another weather piece, my soul would have exited my body. But when I made that decision, I...
There was a crazy storm, though.
Roads turned into rivers. But I remember I was writing my own stuff while I was working still. And to do that writing, I went back through all of my journals for the past like probably 10 years. And I had been writing in different ways for years. I just want to write my own stuff. I just want to write my own. Like I never realized I was writing it because it wasn't maybe the main thing I was writing. Maybe I was journaling about something that felt bigger at the time. But it would always be like an addendum to what I was writing. Like these things loop around in your brain so much, and it's kind of crazy to see the amount of clarity. That's why I love journaling personally. Like I mentioned when we were talking to Emmett, The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, which is like a seminal book and workbook on kind of living your own creative path. And it's for anyone. She talks about lawyers using it. So it's not just artists, but it's, you know, thinking of yourself as an artist, no matter kind of how you're living. And there's the two kind of main pillars of it. And the first is morning pages, which is 3 pages of journaling every morning. And that changed my life. It 100% changed my life. And I don't think you need to do 3 pages. I need to do the 3 pages because whatever way my brain works, for the first like page and a half, I'll be like, I'm good. I'm okay. Things are okay. And by like page 3, I'm like, I'm not okay. So I need that 3 pages to kind of break through to myself. But when you are journaling every day, you kind of can't hide from yourself. You can't hide from how you're feeling. You can't hide from what you want. And I think that journaling not to be a good writer, like she in the book says, like, do not try to make this sound good. Like, then you're not kind of doing it right. It's just truly just when you are putting, it's the same as if you have a good partner or a really good friend that you're bouncing things off of, the like big ideas that you have in your head that if you keep them inside, it's like, oh, that's crazy. But if you're saying it all the time, it starts to feel crazy that you're not doing it. And I don't know how I got to journaling. This is the Monday of it all. Big choices, making changes.
Well, you said that, like, you know, stuff like has been bubbling away for long periods of time. And I think we both definitely, I would add to that, like, you know, you go back and say, oh, I've written about that before. You pick up a journal from 3 years ago and was like, huh, I was thinking about that back then. I just remember that right. The other day. Or like, I'm actually doing that now. And I will say, like, in terms of journaling, like, something I really believe in, I've done a lot over the years. It's really helped me navigate choppy waters, find clarity. And, like, straight up, like, I'm not as diligent or as consistent at it as you are. And I was kind of curious, as you were talking there, like, even on those days where you wake up and you'd be like, oh, I couldn't be arsed today. Or, you know, like, your first thought is, actually, no, I'm just going to go for a walk, or, like, I'll just jump into work. What is it that kind of really helps you kind of say no, like, to prioritize that and do, like, make that? Because you said choices earlier. So every morning you do make a choice. I can attest to that. Like, you do your 3 pages. Like, what helps you consistently make that choice?
It's kind of like any of the things that we know are good for us, but we don't want to do. I'll, like, say if I don't feel like going to yoga one day and I'm like, oh, but I know at the end of it I'll feel so good. And that's what it is. So even if I am like, oh, I'd rather reach for my phone and kind of just scroll before I start work. Yeah. I kind of just picture how it'll feel to have done it, and I know that then it's worth it, and then I just do it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like any of those, you know, I'd rather have a burger, but
sure.
But this grilled chicken is gonna make me feel better. Kind of that kind of vibe.
No, I think, like, with journaling and stuff, like, that's definitely something that I would always encourage people to try, even if, you know, you do it, like, hey, just actually start off. You can start off really simple, like, I know people can do, like, it can be, like, gratitude journals, but even sometimes I would say to you, like, just do, like, 3 things that, like, you want to get done today, or 3 things that you thought you did well the day before, or 3 things that you wish you had done better, just kind of, like, tricking your brain into just kind of doing a bit of the reflection piece, really, and kind of then is looping all the way back to Emma, which is, like, really in terms of the, like, self-awareness comes from, it can't come without the introspective looking inside. I know, like, I think towards the end, like, we mentioned, like, the man in the glass and that poem, and even I saw he had, like, posted it down on his Instagram, like, in the gym with that poem, like, the man in the glass. And I think that was kind of like a perfect really metaphor for the conversation of, like, we talk about, you know, those words, honesty, accountability, self-awareness, like, it comes from, like, looking in the mirror instead of, I think it's for both of us, certainly myself, at times in my life, it's a lot easier to point the finger than to, like, look in the mirror.
Yeah, can you summarize the poem? Because he did mention that, like, a few times.
Yeah, it's just like, I can actually get it, or we'll put it in the newsletter.
We'll put it in the newsletter. It'll be on Real.
Because I actually, like, I used it recently I was doing a team workshop with a college team, and I used it with them. Like, I told the story of Emmett, like, so this podcast actually like it landed with me that much. Like I took it into some of my day-to-day work and shared the story with a team. And I shared the poem with them. Like I don't have my poetry, my old English teachers listening, but like, you should remember those poems. You got to learn those lines. But like,
hesitation.
It's just about like that, you know, I suppose there'll be external praise. There'll be external criticism. There'll be lots of things that go on, but ultimately underneath it all, at the end of the day, it's about you being able to look in the mirror and say, like, I gave it my all. I tried my best. Like I went for it. Like I took a big swing. We'll definitely put in the newsletter for anyone. And even like genuinely, because like I know like I'm not a big poetry guy. Like I know like you would love poetry, but it's just like sometimes you just need to getting that message in a different format in a way. Like it kind of hits harder, like it did for me.
Yeah.
Like just sometimes, you know, like you just see it, just the message just comes at you in a slightly different way. It's kind of the same message, but for whatever reason between Emmett had brought that up. We had talked about it in a workshop with a team. Me and Emmett had done together. And then I'd done, it just kind of, that phrase just lands. Like it just is, because it just kind of brings all this stuff very, it's like simple. Like yeah. That's the beauty of it, I think. I think like in terms of like all that side of it, I suppose like, I think it will kind of loop me towards and kind of talking a little bit about, because it was one of the other big strands of the conversation that certainly I reflected on. It sat with me, was just around like the drinking part of it, the problem drinking part of it. And I don't think we did the deepest dive on it, but like it also didn't need to, because like I just kind of knew, like it was part of his story. He was mm-hmm. open and honest about it. So like, I know sometimes with like media can be like, you know, oh, like how much are you drinking? How often are you drinking? And kind of want to like exaggerate all that. But like, it just, we've all like, certainly I've been there. Like I've been a problem drinker in my past, like and I think sometimes that was just, I think the easiest way I'd feel describing it was just that, like, especially as a younger man, as a younger male, like I didn't have the emotional intelligence, the self-awareness to deal with my thoughts and feelings. And so like going drinking was an easy way to kind of numb those feelings at times, but also sometimes it was a way of just like flicking the switch to distraction. So you're out with friends, you're kind of in different environments. And Emmett's story kind of brought some of that part of my life back to, in terms of really like, part of me was like, oh God, like I don't, like those were grim days.
Yeah.
Like I know like there's obviously it's multiple strands or parts of when I, like in terms of my book and like my journey, like it was like my self-awareness, understanding my relationship with alcohol and the impact it had on both my body, but especially my mind, was like a big part of my development as a younger person. Mm-hmm. I think, like genuinely, I think for a lot of us, it happens kind of, you go from early 20s to like mid to late 20s. Yes. But I suppose when the alcohol side of it's mixed with like mental health issues, depression, anxiety, like it's, I'm pretty sure we did, like me and Emmett mentioned, it was like throwing petrol on the fire. Like, yeah. And yeah, it kind of had that first full swirl of, oh, it's like the scaries, but also yeah. Like, oh, it's kind of, we're like, I'm very happy to be out the other side of that.
I think part of it too, that I can relate to, and I think listening to you there, is like if you're going through something, especially if it's something with your mental health, and so you can't physically see it, and like the, say you're in your 20s, and the norm is drinking, it's almost like you almost keep doing it because it's what everybody else is doing. Why should I? So, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then it kind of, it's making your life worse. But it's almost just can seem normal.
Yeah, I think even as you say that, Mary-Kate, like I think like it makes me think of, and I remember I'm trying to think who I had this conversation with, but it's like particularly like Irish culture. Now don't be going stereotyping, don't be like, yeah, well of course you're drinking. But like all joking aside, like wedding, go to the pub afterwards. Mm-hmm. Funeral, we go to the pub afterwards. Win a match, go to the pub afterwards. Lose a match, go to the pub afterwards. So like, it's very ingrained in our culture, and in some ways it's a beautiful, brilliant thing. And at different times in my life, like I've really, and I still love that fabric of culture in terms of connection and conversation and friends. It's something that still plays a significant yeah. role in my life, and I get a lot of joy from, like I love going, like I love when me and you just go and get to sit down and like, and have a couple of beers like we did on Friday. Mm-hmm. Like, but I suppose where I say the kind of flipping that over and back is like, and it does go back to self-awareness and accountability. Like there was definitely periods of my life where I had to not go to pubs. Mm-hmm. And then you'd miss the connection, but it was also, I just couldn't, because it was messy, I just couldn't piece it together enough. I would try, yeah, but I could just go and not drink. But then like, even just at a practical level, again, I caveat it with like young people. Like, you know, like, why aren't you drinking? Why aren't you drinking? Like, here, have a drink. It's like, no, I'm good. But like, and if someone come and like, just give you a drink. Right. And it's like, and I used to use like, cause I was like, when I was playing football, I would use that as kind of like the excuse a lot. Like, oh, we'll have a game on Sunday or I'm not drinking because of a thing. But it, even when you're already in that place of insecurity, struggling with the dynamic of your relationship with alcohol, like society was always just trying to like, have a drink, have a drink. I struggled with that a lot. Like I really did. And it definitely kind of brought that back to me. And I just share it. Cause like, I know people still do, but who we're like, we know and are friends with, but also people who like don't know and listen are definitely go through variations of that. And that can be someone coming home after work and all of a sudden, like, you know, can be having like one glass of wine every day, can become like three, or all of a sudden it's like at the end of the week, there's like multiple bottles sitting in the kitchen. Or also it can be like fella sitting in a car or in his apartment watching a match, and Joe starts off having a love one or two beers by myself, and then it's all of a sudden six or seven. And usually, like, just I say that from the perspective of like, that's just usually kind of like, I'd call it an orange flag of around like kind of something that's like on your mind. And that can be like a loneliness, a connection thing, but also it can be like just I suppose just some sort of a struggle, and without realizing that becomes like the crutch or coping mechanism rather than just some of the more proactive ones that can be. I know we don't want to jump straight back like therapy because we've done that multiple times, but like, but also just like going for a walk, meeting a friend, going to the movies, all those other smaller little things. And I think just, I know from my life with friends and like from different walks, that's sometimes like the consistent drinking has usually been the opportunity to say to someone, just want to check in, is everything, like, how are you doing? Like, what's going on in your end?
It's like the smoke around the fire.
Yeah, I think so. That's a nice way of putting it.
Thank you so much.
Wow.
I think that so much of it is having the self-awareness that you get when you, like, you choose to kind of take the things that have happened or that you've experienced and stop, reflect, and make some changes, you know? Like, I feel like now that, say, I'm at this age, if I'm feeling anxious just generally, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to drink that day. Mm. Even if it's a situation where there's drink, because that I just know that that's not going to make me feel good.
Yeah.
Whereas I think, I'm just thinking back to my 20s. There was such a hard time when, like, I've talked about before, but like my brother died, and then I came back to a world that was, everything was the same. Like, I was in my mid-20s. My friends were still in their mid-20s. I was a completely different person. Like, I didn't feel, I had no idea who I was. My identity was gone. But all the things swirling around people in their mid-20s, like, that was the atmosphere I was in. So, like, I was like, I guess I'll just try to still be normal and go out with everybody, even though I am, like, you know, not even in my own body. But that's a really hard thing, I think, when you're going through something and the norm is, you know, going out, drinking a lot. That's what people in their mid-20s do.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't want to be like a freak, even more of a freak than I feel like, you know. Mm. And so I think a lot of it is just, and you can have self-awareness at any age. I think it's easier to gain when you have some years under your belt.
Yeah, it just comes with like, most things, it comes with like any of these mental skills, like it comes with like experience and like having more evidence to kind of learn from. Like, so it's like, of course, by nature, it gets better as you get older. But I also know people very, like, a lot older than me who would have the self-awareness of a stone. Do you know what I mean? So like, it is something that like can be worked on, and
it's another choice.
And I know, like, over the years with self-awareness, like journaling is definitely a great way of doing it, but also like having conversations with people you're close to, or feel like you can ask for like feedback on certain things, or like, because it actually helps get like your self-awareness can improve by like learning from other people's perspectives. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, I would always believe too, like, if you get more self-aware, like, it definitely helps you be more aware of others. And I would like say over the years, like, say just linking it back to like the drinking experiences, like, I remember there was one, like you said, I nearly laughed when you said like, I don't want to be a freak, because like, I remember like being out one night and like, obviously my mental health was like on the floor, but like, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going out because I can't be dealing with this. And like, I remember, like, I did it like for years ago, I did like a little, it was like a commercial or an ad for like the Irish government. We're doing a mental health campaign. So I got turned into like a little cartoon character. It's probably another one we could throw into the newsletter ever. But it was about that. I described an incident on a night out where like I ended up like feeling so overwhelmed. So I felt like everyone was staring at me in like a nightclub. So like, you talk about being a freak, like that was where like the alcohol had taken like my mind to. And like, I remember just like locking myself in the cubicle and like just sitting on the toilet and like just trying not to cry for like a half an hour, like just like literally like soak it all up. And then like I did that thing where like gathered it up, suppressed it enough to like open the door, walk back out and be like, hey, like what's, you know? I just thought like at that point, like self-awareness, like was myself, like self-awareness wasn't good enough. And like, so like I made choices that were, I went back out, or then anyone asked like, are you okay? I'd be like, yeah, all is good. And that's the big thing about it. Like, I think like just practically day to day now, like as you said, if you're feeling anxious or stressed, it's like, yeah, sometimes maybe having one drink is like good. But like also at times you just want to just mind yourself that little bit more. I just think it's something as a society that it's just a little thing just to watch out for. Like we're none of us are, even Emmett when he's here, he wasn't like, no one ever drink ever again. But it's just like, as we're older and like, you know, like a little wiser, like it's just a little thing just to keep an eye on. Just like those little orange flags can just bring up that you can either help yourself or, and I think that's where I was going to go with it. Like over the years, like it's definitely that self-awareness of my experiences 100% helped me have better conversations with people I'm close to about, hey, what's like what's going on. And actually often they were quite glad that that was the gateway into the conversation, you know. And it's straight up like that can be someone, you know, you go through a breakup and all of a sudden, instead of having your two or three nights where you're like you're together with someone else, you're kind of sitting there on your own watching like watching Netflix or whatever. Yeah, just definitely something I would, as we talk about like that self-awareness piece, it's just something to, we just throw in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And in terms of, yeah, when you're honest with yourself and self-aware, I do think it helps when you want to talk to a friend about something or like a loved one about something, because you kind of feel more free to just ask the question because there's no ulterior motives. There's no, do you know what I mean? Accusations. It's more, and a lot of times it's like, we've been there. So it's not, you know, it's kind of a soft landing if someone wants to open up about something they're going through.
Yeah, I think we would both sometimes play that role in our groups of friends or family in terms of, because we've like talked openly about different things we've experienced, that people, when you do ask the question, sometimes people do feel that a little bit more comfortable to come back. I suppose the other thing I would say too is like, very often the first time you ask the question, people shut it down and say no. But usually then like if you follow up in a week or two, it's kind of like you've just done the soft marking it on like on their radar, and then like they can come back to it later down the line. So that's something I would always just say to people in terms of like, if you're just, you know, as like we all are often trying to be a good friend or trying to be a better person for yourself, for other people, like just that's just the way, asking the question, always having the courage and not being afraid to, but don't be surprised to get shut down and told to like fuck off like first time.
And that's like part of it, because you're not like, we're all always going through things. It's not like you and I know all the answers or are never the ones who need the help. Like God, that's far from the case. But it's just kind of being authentic to yourself instead of just being like, yeah, I think there's something going on with her. Just actually asking is the most authentic thing to do. And it's not to save anyone. None of us can do that. It's just kind of just knowing that that's how you want to approach something.
Yeah, it makes me think, like one time I was in, it was a couple of years ago, but I did like a workshop in like a big company in Ireland. And we were doing like around that kind of thing of about having the courage to like ask a question. And when I asked like the group, like what would be the biggest reason, the biggest barrier to them not asking someone like that question of like, you know, like, how are you? Is everything okay? It was the fear of the answer. Like that was actually the barrier.
Oh, wow.
Like, and then they felt like,
The fear of an honest answer,
yeah,
and then not and knowing then what to say.
It actually led to the burden of not knowing the solution or the, like the, I was like, it was always stuck with me. It was really interesting because, and I just, we're going to say that now because it's like, whenever you ask the question and if a person decides to share, like it's not your job to have like post-its ready with the five solutions on it. Like it's just to listen. Like, and that was kind of what I wanted to kind of wrap that part of it up with. It was like listening is one of the most powerful things you can do as like a human, as a friend. Like if you're listening now, thanks so much. But but it is like, it's just, okay, like, thanks for sharing that with me and let me have a think about it. Like, I just kind of wanted to, like, kind of, sometimes even remind myself of that, because sometimes I can get into, oh yeah, I gotta try figure this out, or you know, you've got to, and it's like, okay, no, I just need to, like,
no, I think that, yeah, if that's what people are afraid of, take that burden off yourself, because that's not your job, is to come up with a solution. Like, your job is just to be there. That's all anybody ever really wants, is just for someone to kind of validate what they're going through, to reflect back what they're hearing, and just to be like, yeah, I hear that this is what you're in, and I am still here for you, and I will be here for you in the next step, in the next step, in the next step. But yeah, it's none of our jobs to solve things.
Definitely not. I think that comes to mind there is just the idea of, like, ask the question, like, show them you care, and then, like, just to kind of help the wiggle room of self-compassion, compassion, resilience, then you're into that little end of the spectrum as well. And, like, with all that too, I think, like, one of the other things that I wanted to touch upon before we kind of wrap up this episode and this kind of recap is, I think pillars is something that was probably the other thing we talked about, and that came from Emmett's conversation, in terms of, like, at times in life we do make choices and you want to go all in on something, but often you need balance and you need things that help you carry the can, that when there's a setback, when there's a shortcoming, that you're not entirely dependent on one thing. And, like, that will happen with people. That can be, like, their career, they're in a job that's all consuming. That can be, okay, I'm in sport and that comes first and everything else falls to the wayside. And at times you do have to prioritize those things to be successful. You do have to, like, push it more. But you also need those pillars to kind of pad yourself out, pad your life out, that on a day where, you know, one thing is falling apart, to feel know that they can, the other pillars can take some of the weight to kind of help you, I would call it, be like a sustainable performer and be able to keep going rather than just kind of crashing and burning. And that's, again, I say that from experience.
Yeah. Well, nothing can be everything, you know, like, no. Not any time. And I think that we probably have all in our lives done it, when you're just going for one thing and your happiness, you're perceiving your happiness to be based on this one thing, and then you don't get it, then the impact is going to be so much worse. Whereas when you kind of spread yourself across one, when you were the first person I had ever heard talk about pillars, and I do like that kind of visual or way of thinking about it, like, what are the things that are most important to you, making sure that you're, and it's never going to be like 25%, 25%, 25%, 25%.
And it's constantly changing as well. Like, it's but fluid.
Just making sure that you're still nurturing all of those things, so that when one thing, you know, falls, the other things are still there to kind of keep you up when you neglect those other ones. I'm trying to think, you know, his example is so big, right? Because the Olympics,
it's just a monumental crazy thing, like,
the
in society.
The Olympics are wild. Like, we all know the Olympics. That is, like, the number one thing you can do. And so I can see how, yeah, like, you really have to treat that as, like, all-consuming. But, of course, then – and I've heard other Olympians, and you had said, too, like, talk about coming out of that. I'm trying to remember the Olympic – there, I'll put it in the newsletter. But, yeah, because then everything – comes back to the surface that you've been kind of pushing down. Like, it doesn't disappear. And I think that that happens with, if you're ever just focused on one thing for your happiness, it's just like, it can't be like that. I remember there, like, I'm thinking of, like, there was a job that I was going for at one point and I wanted it so bad. And I was like, if I get this job, that's everything. Like, that's it. That's the answer to everything. And then I didn't get it. And it took me so much longer to bounce back than if I had kept it in perspective of, like, this could be a path that I go on and it would be really cool. And the other thing is, like, when it's such a blow, like, it doesn't have to be, because now I'm a couple years out from that and I'm like, thank God I didn't get that job. Like, yeah, I was perceiving it to be like the end all be all, but that job was not the answer. Oh my gosh, that would have been not the right thing. And it's just kind of a reminder of, especially when you have the perspective, like, just kind of, if you take care of all of those sides of yourself, of all the, if you keep it all kind of going, and it's hard. It's one of the reasons, like, you don't, you know, it's kind of hard to juggle. But when you do, it kind of lessens those blows for those kind of big bigger moments in life.
Yeah, like those pillars and like, even just as the metaphor, like I know like in workshops and stuff I've done with schools, companies and teams, like I'll literally use like, you know, that like classic like Roman Colosseum style, yeah, like yeah, image of like pillars, and like just even like maybe put it into a little bit more context. Like, so yeah, like, so sometimes like it's family is one for me, like friends is one, like my kind of sport kind of passion pursuit is one, my work is one. But also then even as one of the things I learned as I got older was one of my pillars was just like getting like alone time and making sure I had time to like be with myself, because a lot of my work would be like very extroverted, outgoing, and making sure I had time to like recharge, sit still. Mm-hmm. Like I always share this example, like when people ask me, like quite often, like as you know, well, I'm testified to, I just go to the movies by myself, like because mm-hmm. it's just a big dark room, it's a big screen, and it's 2-3 hours where I just switch off, kind of be with myself. Like that's like a little act of like self-compassion. I know when weeks get busy, when schedules pick up, like that's the one that falls first usually. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, I feel like a little tired, or I'm starting to feel a little bit burned out, I've got migraines. And that's just one that I've like, and again, I'm always still working on it, learning on it, but like that image is like helps me with it, and that's why I share it. And the other thing that came back to me was, it's a couple of years ago now, but one of the episodes of this, the earlier iteration of this podcast with Philly McMahon, and actually like, I was in the analytics the other day and I saw like people were like listening to that, even though it's from I think maybe 20
that's awesome.
It's probably 2018, and I did it live at it's like a venue in Dublin, it was a live show, but he talked to me about like literally, so he learned the same lesson, like he knew about pillars and needing that like that balance, and he was literally color coding like a chart on his, like I think it was on his fridge or in his notebook, where like, well, I make up the colors now, but like, you know, green is family, red is right, football, like orange is work, and like mapping it out on a calendar to make sure that it was it, like again, balance is something we all strive for, it's very hard to get, you honestly rarely get it, but keeping it within like kind of the ballpark is what like helps sustain it. And that always stuck with me. I've used that at different times, even when I find like my pillars are out of whack, like I'll make like a little habit tracker and like do it for a month in terms of sketching in. It's a combination of that, and then your good friend Alana would post stuff on Instagram, mm-hmm. and that would like, that helps sometimes remind me of it. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna like, yeah, for a month I'm gonna write down like if that's reading, if that's going for a walk every morning, if that's like, you know, whatever, like just, and just the little coloring, like taking that time, it really helps.
It's
with
a
balance.
Visual representation.
Correct. I think it's really, really helpful. I would encourage anyone to try that. And the other thing, with the last thing I was just going to say, and it was like with pillars, it's like, yeah, it's easy to sit here now and be like, yeah, like pillars, balance, like, you know, oh, super, like great job. But like so many times in my life, like that balance completely gets wiped out. And like definitely when I played, for some reason, sport always like whacked it out about like, mm-hmm. so when I played in particular, like that's, I would have like, I remember having a, like been back in counseling, was working through it, and I was like, I don't feel great, or like, you know, kind of things are kind of gone again. I was like, oh yeah, because while I do have these 4 or 5 pillars, this thing's like a skyscraper in the middle of it. And even like I would wrestle with that a little bit now in terms of being like a manager and a coach, like sport just, it's my passion, like I love it and I can just pull, but just trying to keep that balance. And again, there's parts of your year and in the season you've got to let it kind of be consuming, mm-hmm. but like just trying to
within
wrestle
reason,
with it,
kind
yeah.
of.
I'm just trying to like, I suppose manage it really.
Yeah. Oh, I think
it's tough.
That's what I was saying, like nothing is linear. Like you don't get to a point where you're like, wow, I really have my whole life balanced now. Like I really think that it's a constant journey of like reflection, fixing things, reflection, altering things to, and like adjusting. I obviously do not play sports, but
You were talking big game earlier about this basketball peanut league or whatever. You were talking big game.
But what I was thinking about is I would say I'm like, if I'm going hard for something, like I, not punishment, but like, it's like, oh, well, the first thing to fall to the wayside is always like the leisure things, the
more, self-care,
the self-care, the things that like kind of keep you going, and like the creativity and the keep you like ticking along are the first things to go, but they're just as necessary. And it's so crazy. I had said about The Artist's Way and Morning Pages. So there's kind of two pillars to The Artist's Way. One is Morning Pages. The other is called An Artist's Date. And it's an idea that like every week you do something for you. And that could be anything. That could be like, I'm going to go to a museum. I'm going to go for a walk in a place I don't typically go for a walk, just to kind of take care of myself to get inspiration. I'm going to do an activity that I've kind of always wanted to do. I want to go to a place. And when I started doing the artist's way, it's a 12-week course. And I was like, that's going to be so easy. Like, oh, just like a fun little thing
skip
for
out
myself.
Somewhere. Okay, like, here we go.
Yeah, I can do that. And morning pages, I was like, that sounds so hard, doing 3 pages every morning. I'm never going to be able to do that.
Every day.
I don't think I can commit to that. And I always struggle to do the artist date, and I always do my morning pages because it's self-compassion and choosing to prioritize something, which obviously looks different for everyone. Like, we don't have children. I know for parents, it's harder. For so many people with different types of schedules, it's harder. The idea is, though, you can find something within your world that gives you a little bit of that feeling, you know, whether it's just going for a walk in a place you love going for a walk in, going somewhere, seeing a movie, just anything like that. And it just does come back to self-compassion and kind of choosing to prioritize
is the word,
those things and identifying what they are for you. For you, it's the movies. Like,
Dune 2, go see it. So good.
I haven't been to the movies in years.
If Mary Kay hears me talking about Dune 2 one more time, her eyes are going to hit the back of her head.
It just looks so dusty. But yeah, I think that it's identifying kind of what that thing is for you and making a choice.
That would make a great review online of Dune 2. So dusty.
I feel like everything you dirty watch, everyone just looks dirty in it. But
I'll come back to that. But no, I think like just, okay, go ahead.
No, go.
I was like saying, you just say an artist date, like if that's something that people do take out of this episode, like it can be a big thing, but it can be a little thing. Like for me, it can be going to the movies. If you want to go for a walk and listen to this podcast, great artist date. Mm-hmm. And I think like prioritization or like prioritizing is the word that I would use. And like, I came home the other day from like, I was at a work thing with like a head coach, and he was basically saying the same thing of like, need to find time to work out. Sometimes it's hard and, you know, has children, but it's like, but basically like in a nutshell, it was like, yeah, but like if you have a doctor's appointment, you make an hour for it. So like make this, like, yes, it's just a priority. You got to pencil in and say, that's my hour. So go for a walk, go for a drive,
literally,
do whatever it is.
Literally last week I was talking to my therapist about this and I was like, yeah, I just don't have the space to write. And she was like, well, you do. She was like, just the way you go to yoga, same classes every single week. You don't miss a class. You're choosing to prioritize that. You can choose to do. Yeah. You're right. It's
hard. Like, it's choices, but like also it's hard. Like there's so many distractions. There's so many things going on in the world. There's so many stressors to like take you away from it. But I think like always, probably the last thing I would finish this conversation up on is that like, this is just like, we're all humans. Sometimes we think like we're unique, but it's also like, there's a lot of us, like when times are tough, times are hard, most often one of the first things most of us nip is the self-compassion, the self-care.
Oh yeah, because like, you're like, it's hard, I'll work even harder.
Yeah.
And then it makes everything so much harder. That is, I am in a perpetual cycle of trying to break that cycle.
Yeah, no, it's like, and again, like if you figure out the answer or like, let us know, like it's something we all have to work on. I think that's, anyone listening today, I hope that we get that from this conversation. It's like, you know, if I'm working with, say it's with athletes in particular, I kind of use the iPhone metaphor for them, for like, you know, every day you can wake up and your phone, it can either be fully charged, but it rarely is. So usually, I got it back up to 80 or 90, but then over the course of the day, like it's dropping down all the time, interactions, work, tasks. So it's like finding ways both during the day and then obviously like with sleep to like recharge yourself. And like most people think, yeah, I'd be at 100% when I wake up. It's like, I certainly wasn't at 100% this morning. Do you know what I mean? Like I woke up with about 70, like being honest about it. Like,
you were at 70?
Yeah. That was pre-coffee.
I had put myself in a
low power mode.
A clean 20%.
Okay, maybe I overshot with 70. My eyes were pretty heavy. But I suppose, like, yeah. Before we finish up, I think definitely anyone's listening to this in terms of just taking, maybe keeping in mind like what an artist day might look like, the self-care, self-compassion, that kind of part of it, what your pillars are in life. You want to just have a think about those kind of things. And then I think the other thing I wanted to say was just around, obviously, if you're listening to this, thank you very much. Like, we're so happy and so excited, and we've got so much joy over the last 2 weeks of, I suppose, sharing the conversations we've recorded. So we've done Emmett and Katie so far, sharing our conversations, our recap, our reflection, to add to the episodes, and then adding in like the people with the newsletter and subscribing. Mm-hmm. That was kind of what I'd finish up on. If you're listening and you're liking it, if you could just help us out in terms of rating and reviewing the show on Spotify, on Apple, and then also subscribing to the newsletter. There's a free option. There is a paid option, but also like just there's a free option if you want to just subscribe to it, get a flavor of what's going on there. It's supplementary to these episodes, these conversations. So we'd love that. And then in the next couple weeks, we're also going to have a cool like spot prize kind of thing going for people who have subscribed to the newsletter. We'll do that properly another day.
Yeah.
But just do that for us if you can. And then encourage any of your friends, any of your family, if you think they'd like these conversations, to listen. And thank you for listening.
Yes. If you could review it. I'm a real review hypocrite because I rely on reviews a lot and I never give them. But I will try to correct that karma in the future.
It's all take.
I'm the first person, if I'm like going to buy something, I'm like, well, what do the reviews say? And I'm never giving, but.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah.
I once heard Mary Kay out loud while she was scrolling, looking at reviews, say, show me it on a foot.
Well, if you're selling a shoe, and that shoe is not on a foot, I have no idea what that shoe looks like. That's not okay.
You've made many impressions on me in our lives, and that was one.
If you could review it on Apple and Spotify, that would be so, so huge. It really helps. And then the other thing I wanted to say before we wrap up was on the last episode that was just you and I, my sister-in-law Kirsten was listening in the car, and our niece Quinn heard our voices. And so she was saying, hi, Kate. She calls me Kate. Hi, Kate, I love you. And she thought that I wasn't answering her. So she was getting upset. So just in case Quinn is listening, hi, Quinn, I love you.
Hi, Quinn, I love you too.
It's a good way to wrap up.
Yeah, we're done.
Yes.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
This episode of the Real Talks podcast is brought to you thanks to the MGF Group, a premier building material supplier in New York City. Whether you're a seasoned contractor or a DIY enthusiast, the MGF Group offers a wide range of premium building materials to suit your every need. From cement to lumber, protection materials and safety nets, the MGF Group has got it all under one roof and pride themselves in timely and reliable delivery. Check out the mgfgroup.com for more information.
This episode of the Real Talks podcast is brought to you thanks to the Taylor Public House. Right on the doorstep of Madison Square Garden, the Taylor Public House is the perfect place to connect with family or friends before taking in a concert or sports event. The Taylor is known for its warm welcome, classy ambiance, and comfort food. It has 2 floors, 3 bars, and 2 private event spaces for parties and gatherings. Be sure to stop by and experience the Taylor Public House for yourself, located in the heart of Midtown Manhattan on the corner of 35th Street and 8th Avenue. Check out thetaylornyc.com for more information.